Hi, welcome to Naval Gazing, the official podcast of the Valley Independent Sentinel, better known as valleyindy.org. Today is an interview with Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti, who is trying for his third two-year term in the mayor's office. The interview is conducted by Ethan Fry, the other reporter here at valleyindy.org. I do not partake in it, which is probably a relief for a lot of people. I know I can blab on and on. But in this interview, the idea, and we did it a few weeks ago with the mayor's opponent, Democrat Tarek Raslin, is not really to concentrate on the issues facing the city of Ansonia, but we're trying to get more of a profile of who these candidates are, where they come from, where they want to see the city go, why they got involved, in their own words. So that's the purpose, and I'll leave it to you to judge whether Ethan and I have accomplished that over our last few podcasts. Now, if you want to know the issues facing the city of Ansonia, if you're reading this on valleyindy.org within a story, we tag each and every story on the Ansonia election as Ansonia Election 2017. So click Ansonia Election 2017. You'll have every story we've written concerning these races. The election is in November, by the way. And also letters, guest columns, we call them. That's from candidates, the people actually involved in the city of Ansonia. So we hope through a combination of traditional reporting and new techniques such as this podcast, you can be an informed voter when you head to the polls in November. So, without further ado, I'll shut up. Here is Mayor David Cassetti talking with reporter Ethan Fry. Thanks.
Okay, this is Ethan Fry. I'm being joined now by Mayor David Cassetti. Mayor Cassetti, thank you so much for coming in. And without further ado, let's grab a root and growl, as they say.
Good morning.
Morning. Just first of all, I guess, in putting together the questions for this interview, I was reminded of when you won your first term in 2013, like seconds after you won that election, you know, in your victory speech, one of the first things you talked about was, I'm the grandson of Sicilian immigrants. So it seems that like that heritage has played a big part in shaping who you are now. Are you 100% of Sicilian extraction?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
No, I'm born in Ansonia, 1960. I have the claim of being the first mayor born in the city of Ansonia. I was born in a house on South Street in a minority section of town on the east side.
And wow, I never thought about that. But I guess most, even like Ansonia natives, are born in Griffin Hospital.
Yeah, right. I was a large baby. My mother gave birth to me. I was 12 and a half pounds, and she could not be moved. And Dr. Lenz came to the house and delivered me.
Wow. And then South Street, where is that?
That's off of Orchard and Hill Street.
Okay, was that like in the, like, I guess, well, I was going to ask a question about this later, but, there was that event a few months ago where you dedicated a sign to former boxing champ Pinky Silverberg.
Correct.
Is that like part of the, what was the Italian enclave?
Yeah, that was an Italian section in that area there, okay. Powell Street and Factory Street and all that.
Oh, it's Powell Street. It's not.
Powell.
Sorry, I've always said Poe.
No, P-O-W-E.
Outsider Ethan Fry parachuting like a carpetbagger. Okay, Powell Street. Okay, that's good to know. My grandfather, or one of my grandfathers, was the son of Sicilian immigrants, and like the family, like growing up, they would always note you know, we're Sicilian. It's not like Italian. Right. We're Sicilian. Like, what was it the same in your family?
Yes, or, it was. Yes, like, it was. We were Sicilians.
What's the difference in your view? I mean,
Sicily is a little island 30 miles off the coast of Africa, and it's always been alone. It's been controlled for many years prior to it being part of Italy by the Greeks and by the Arabs and everybody.
And then, there's sort of...
they have their own island.
Yeah, and it's sort of like a more, all Italian immigrants, there's like a tight-knitness, but in the Sicilians, it seems like even more so.
In Ansonia, many Sicilians settled from the town my grandparents came from, Caltanissette, Sicily. They all came here to Ansonia. I mean, Central Street and Beaver Street and Powell Street were high contingent of Sicilian people. They had the St. Michael Society, which closed about 25 years ago. I mean, that was to assist them people who came over from the old country.
And it seems like with my grandparents, it was the same with Middletown.
Right.
Like there's a lot of Sicilians in Middletown, it seems, from Melilli, Sicily.
Right.
But you actually know where, like, the town, did your grandparents, they married when they came over?
Yes, they were married when they came over. I visited it about 25 years ago with my brothers, and we had a great time over there. We saw the old homestead where they were raised and everything.
Yeah. And my grandfather went back. This was must have been like 30, 40 years ago. But, there was that, they were like, oh, you're so-and-so's son.
Right.
Like, come on in, you know. It was like,
they
need to
welcome
go.
You.
Yeah,
they welcomed me and my brothers. Tremendous.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Do you know, like, if you had, like, a map of the island, is it, like, west, east, south, north, south?
Or? It is about 70 miles east of Catania.
Okay.
Caltanissette.
So it's more like toward Messina than Syracuse, I guess, but more toward the Italian side of it. So they, your grandparents met over there,
yes.
And then they immigrated here. Did they move right to Ansonia?
They came into Ellis Island in 1920, and they went from Ellis Island straight to Central Street, Ansonia. Mr. Lepresti, their patron, he was an American, a Sicilian. He was here for years, and he welcomed my grandparents. And my father is named after Stephen Lepresti.
Okay, is that the same Lepresti that, like, the...
Lepresti Court.
Okay, the descendants, there's sort of a name in the valley, I guess.
Yep, they welcomed and got my grandparents settled.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, they I don't know what the rules and stuff were back then, but, like, it would help to have somebody on the other side, I guess,
to help.
And then, do you know what did they do? What did he do? What did your grandfather do?
My grandfather worked at, he got a job working for American Brass right here, Anaconda.
Okay.
He worked there in the mason shop.
And we see, like, I'm just thinking of, like, movies about the experience of immigrants, around the turn. Was it around the turn of, like, the Ellis Island era, around the turn of the century?
There was an influx in the 1920s of many Europeans from all over Europe, including Italy and Sicily.
So that was the time period.
That was a time period.
And, like, there's the old joke about, like, the Italian immigrant riding home being like, I came here because the streets were paved with gold, but one thing, they're not paved with gold.
No.
Two, they're not paved. And
that's
three, I'll be the one paving them.
Right, exactly.
Was it like, did they have to, like, sort of build up from the bottom, I
guess?
Yes,
they did. They lived on Central Street for many years, and my grandfather was a shrewd individual. My brothers told me about it. My older brother, Joey, he's 12 years older than me. He told me how he scraped every dime he can, and he built a homestead on Root Avenue in South Street in the 1940s. But from 1920 to 1942, he lived in an apartment on Central Street, right where not the Stevens apartments, the other apartments across the street. They're all housing there by the Julia Day Nursery.
And did they have, like, there's the stereotype of, like, the big Italian family. Did they have, like, a lot of kids, or did you have a lot of aunts and uncles?
It was my father and two of his sisters, but they had lost two sisters to leukemia.
Oh, wow. Wow. And then... as they sort of put down roots in the country, I guess, or in Ansonia itself, how your parents met, or like?
My father went into the service in 1942, and in 1946, when he got out, he met my mother. My mother's from East Derby, a Sicilian family from East Derby.
Okay, so like you're the Sicilians are right. Sort of like intermarrying as it was in so many communities. So your father was in World War II?
Navy veteran. He was a gunner and a ship's cook. Mm-hmm. And I got his discharge papers proudly sitting in my office from 1946 when he was honorably discharged.
And do you know, was he in like the Pacific? Or?
Yes, okay, he was in both theaters, my father. He was in the Pacific Theater, and then he got switched over to the European Theater during the D-Day invasion.
Oh, wow. That was obviously a...
Yep.
What a tough time, I would imagine. Do you know if he was on like a destroyer?
On a destroyer. Okay, I forget the name of it. I my brother has all that information.
Yeah, my grandfather was on a destroyer.
He was on a destroyer.
Tin can, as they called it. So, like, did your parents met after his discharge, and then did they settle back in Ansonia?
Yes, they. What they did is they were married in 1948. My mother and father. And they resided with his mother and father in the apartment on Root Avenue.
Just to like,
and they stayed started. There. They stayed there until like 1958. They were in the apartment.
And then, how did what did he do once he left the service?
My father worked at Sikorsky's Aircraft in the early 50s, and then in 1952 he became an Ansonia police officer, a supernumerary Ansonia police officer, and he was that from 1952 to 1961. Then he became a regular officer. Mayor Joe Doyle appointed him as a regular officer, so then he left Sikorsky's and he was a regular officer in Ansonia.
And we're like, what was that? I mean, having a father who's a police officer, that must, like, what was that? What is that like? Or did you like remember?
I don't.
Young enough
I don't
to
really
remember,
remember. I do remember the end. My dad died in 1967 of pancreatic cancer. He was 40 years old, and I do remember seeing him in uniform. And in fact, if you come to my office, I have a huge picture of him over my desk that my grandmother had painted after his death, and it was in her house for many years. And then it went to my mother after she died. I was 7.
Okay, and in the background, that was Sheila O'Malley, the economic development director. So you were 7 when you
my
lost
father
your father.
Died.
Like, I mean, my dad died when I was 17. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But like a 7.
Well,
I
had a 17-year-old brother. I was 7, and I had a 10-year-old brother, and we were left. You know, my mother never worked. Didn't work. And my father didn't have enough years in to get a pension, so we had no money. We were dirt poor. We were broke. And my mother says, you know, my mother would never take any handout from anybody. She just said, I got to go to work. And she went to work, and I basically lived with my grandparents.
What did she do?
She worked at B.F. Goodrich, Plant 1, in Roosevelt Drive in Derby.
And the
rubber factory.
Was that just like on the assembly line? I don't know what they did.
Yep.
They make tires there?
I'm not too sure what it was that she made, but she was dealing with a lot of rubber, and mm-hmm. I can remember how bad her hands were scaling and everything from the chemicals that she was using, and her hands were never right after that. But she stayed there until like 1980, and then she went to work for Hershey Metal.
Wow. And then, so like, there's these sort of evoke a lot of industrial past. All these stuff that, I mean, sadly, is you know, as the economy has changed, it's sort of moved on. So were you the youngest of three?
Yes.
And what was it like having two older brothers growing up in Ansonia? Like, I don't know. I have two older brothers too, so everybody always, like, were you like the spoiled one?
No, I was far from the spoiled one. I was the last one to eat, and I used to say, am I going to get anything? Because I had two older brothers that would scrounge all the food up away.
I know. It's like prison eating.
Yes.
Like guarding your plate. But it's at least it's
we good. Had a good life though. My mother made sure that we were taken care of. I mean, she said, you know what, we're not taking any handouts. I'm going to work, and my brother went to work, and it was about the time of the Vietnam War, and because my dad had died, I guess the draft board just, you know, excused him, my older brother Joe, so he didn't serve.
Okay, and you were too young to.
I was too young, okay. Right.
And then, like, something I wanted to ask about, like I sort of mentioned it earlier, with the old Powell Street neighborhood and stuff. Like every year when they have the Holy Rosary Festival, which I missed this year, I was kicking myself. I was out of town. But they talk about like how that was an Italian enclave. Yes. It was, like you said, it was like, you know, tight-knit Italian families. But after, when the flood happened in 55, which was before you were born, obviously, like that sort of wiped that whole area out.
Yeah, that scattered everybody. That scattered everybody throughout the town. That was during, even though it was 1955 and everybody scattered, the hilltop was starting to be developed, the hilltop in Ansonia. I mean, them were all that was all farmland. People started buying property up that area in the hilltop and started developing it.
And then like the old neighborhood, was that, I mean, was it just totally washed out, or did people?
Oh yeah,
like,
it was devastated. People,
okay, so like by the 60s, it was nothing there.
They were starting with redevelopment. I could remember sitting in Julia Day Nursery as a 4.5-year-old kid, looking out right where Holy Rosary Church is now, watching the cranes taking the houses down. That was during the redevelopment area in 1964.
Wow. And then, obviously, like the, as you said, it's weird to imagine the hilltop was just, you know, a single family house after single family house as farms. I mean, it's hard to imagine.
Yep, there was a lot of farms up there.
And then, like, I would imagine that like there was less of like an old school Italian neighborhood in the sense of like, you know, you picture, as I said, like the movies, like the Feast of San Gennaro and stuff down in like Little Italy, but it wasn't like that, I guess.
No. I mean, they had the Italian fest that they have now was in the beginning. I remember as a kid going to it. It was a carnival. It wasn't a quality Italian fest. It was a carnival where they had rides and everything. And then I think around the mid-70s, they changed it to the Italian festival.
Okay. And then, I guess that, did that coincide with like when they built that church over there, the Holy Rosary Church, or I don't know.
Well, Holy Rosary Church was built like right after my dad passed away. They were starting, I remember them building the church.
Okay.
Because
I guess,
and right after, and that, like I said, 1967, they said it's 50 years, but it really was a carnival for like 10 years or 8 years. And then they switched to the Italian festival.
Okay. And I guess that like that, they wouldn't have been able to build that if that, the flood hadn't happened.
Exactly. Because then were all houses there.
You look for the silver lining, I guess. Yep. And like that's,
I mean, across the street from where the church is, where right now where like Rite Aid is and the Halloween shop, that used to be Mead School.
Oh, okay.
Mead School was there, and then they demoed that. And right next to Mead School was a junkyard. I can remember going to Mead School and seeing the junkyard in operation with the big magnet and everything.
Hmm. And yeah, I mean, that's like I haven't been inside that I could recall, but that's like from the outside, it looks like a beautiful church. So, I mean, I guess, like I said, look for the
silver. Oh, it's a beautiful
lining.
Church.
I don't want to make this like all like personal reference to like my, you know, Italian relatives extraction, but like, did you go to like public school?
I went to public school.
Okay.
I went to every public school. I was thrown out of every public school because I was a mischievous kid, and my mother had to go to school so often. But you know what? I got it out of my system. By the time I became a junior or sophomore in high school, my economics teacher straightened me out, Mr. Tom Haley. He lives in Ansonia currently. He was a great, great economics teacher. He taught me a lot of things.
Now, that's interesting to me because, you hear about like a lot of my Italian, you know, relatives that like Italian Catholic sort of extraction. They went to Catholic school,
right?
And you always hear about like the nuns hitting kids with rulers and stuff. And like a lot, you know, some of them, it was, you know, we're going to send you to the Catholic school if you're misbehaving. But that didn't.
No, I went to public school.
Okay, so that's lucky for you.
You're lucky for me.
You didn't get the.
And I went. Then I went to Emmett O'Brien.
Oh, right. I was going to ask about that later. So,
okay.
A random person I ran into on the street once described you as like a class clown type. I don't know that could mean like a number of different things. Like I was like a class, you know, you could be a smart aleck. You could, you know, it could be like mean a lot of different things.
Yeah,
so do you think is that accurate? Would you?
I was a mischievous kid growing up, going to grammar school, always getting in trouble, and I had my issues. But I got to put a shout out to Jim Dellavopi, who was my mentor really as a kid growing up. I mean, he used to take me in and explained to me, you know, this is how you got to be. And, you know, I listened to him to a certain extent. But Jim helped me out. Mr. John Adzema, who they got the school named after him up there at the middle school, the
is
portables.
That the family, the funeral home?
You know, he's a cousin. He's okay. A cousin to them. He was a great guy. Mr. Adzema got me my first job at 14, working for Team at Clean and Prendergast School. I was 14 years old, and he got me a job working the whole summer in 1974.
Like Team Inc. on Elizabeth. Wow, I didn't know that was.
They got me a job, and I worked up at Prendergast School in the summer of 74.
And then how did you decide? Did you decide to go to Emmett? Like how
right.
did that work?
I really wanted to be a carpenter. Even when I was a kid, I always liked building things, and I wanted to be a carpenter. So I went to school to be a carpenter, and I graduated in 79. And 1 year out of school, I was building houses, and I was watching. I was working in a development area where they were putting in sewer and water and everything. And I said, you know what? This is what I want to do. I don't really want to do carpentry anymore. I'd done enough of it. So that's why I went into the heavy construction business, you know, working for somebody.
And I like I just as a callback to a minute ago, the Jim Della Volpe, that's the
former mayor,
your immediate predecessor. So I don't know. That must have been sort of I wish I had known more about that.
Oh yeah,
during the campaign.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Jimmy Della Volpe and me were tight, very tight. Like 1975, when I was in eighth grade. I mean, he used to come to class and say, "I need Dave Cassetti," and I'd get out of class, and he'd take me for drive me around and talk to me, bring me to get me something to eat. He was a mentor of mine, Jimmy Della Volpe. He really was.
And then
it hurt. It bothered me that I beat him in the election because I said, you know, he did so much for me, but. You know, things had to change.
And then, I guess, you know, that was sort of a poignant moment at your headquarters right after the election, right after the results came in. Like, he came over and,
yes.
you know, literally, like, raised your hand and gave you a hug. And,
yes.
You know, everybody sort of...
He's near and dear to me, that man. He really is.
Appreciated that.
He really is near and dear to me.
And then... when did... You're a former amateur boxer.
Right.
I think, I don't know if you ever fought... professionally or
no, I was ready to just a little background. I started right out of high school because a friend of mine wanted me to get involved. He says, "You're always using your hands." He says, you should try boxing. So he brought me up to who I would meet my next mentor, Joe Rossi from Naugatuck, at the YMCA in Naugatuck, and I started my boxing career there. And then I went to Waterbury to the Libre Athletic Club on South Main Street, where I spent 6 years training, and I trained with professional fighters, and I acquired a 49-6 record, state middleweight championship. But Mr. Rossi did a lot for me. I had a 30-year relationship with him. I lost him in 2010 at 94, but he was a great man.
And then, were you I would imagine working with your hands, or being a carpenter, you said you work a lot with your hands. Mm-hmm. Did you were you ever worried that you're going to throw a punch at somebody and break one of them or anything like that?
No.
Got them taped up and gloved, I guess. I mentioned earlier that event over on the corner of what was once Front Street, was it? Where the Pinky Silverberg sign is.
Right.
Was he an inspiration? Had you heard
growing
of him?
Growing up, I remember of him, people talking about him. There was Louis Cavallo. Louis Cavallo was an older gentleman that worked at the Ansonia YMCA, and he used to talk about Pinky Silverberg all the time, and that's how I got to know a little more about him. And coincidentally, Mr. Rossi, my boxing manager and mentor, was honored in 2007 at the Boxing Hall of Fame along with Pinky Silverberg. They were both inducted the same year, and that's where I met Ron Silverberg, the son.
Okay, and then was boxing you mentioned how you got into it, was that, and like you mentioned sort of being like a mischievous kid or whatever, was that, did that help you give you focus or drive? Absolutely.
Listen, it is so critical from the age of 16 to 24. I got to give credit to boxing. It saved my life because I don't know where I was headed. I really did not know where I was headed. And Mr. Rossi instilled in me good values and get there every day and train. I mean, we were in Waterbury every night. We were in Naugatuck, twice a week. And I think it saved me because I don't know where I would have been headed to. So I credit boxing for that.
And when you're at that age, I guess, you know, you're...
It's critical years for a person. It really is because they don't know.
You're less mature, let's say. So, right. I mean, was it...
It definitely matured me.
Mm-hmm. And then like, what's that training? Were you training every day?
I would run. I would run 3.5 miles. My route was from my house on South Street all the way up to the Rotary on Beaver Street, Clinton Road, every day. Inclement weather, when it was raining, I would jump rope in my garage for like a half hour straight. I always built up my wind and my endurance. That's what he concentrated on.
And then what, like, I'm trying to think back that era. Was that like the tail end of the Muhammad Ali
sort of?
So yep. It was like George Foreman?
No, Frazier, George Foreman was even done. George Foreman, I was really into boxing back then. I remember Muhammad Ali having that last fight with Larry Holmes. He should have never done it because I think that's what really ruined Muhammad Ali was that last fight with Larry Holmes. He really beat him real bad. So that was like 1980. But that was about the time of Sugar Ray Leonard.
Okay.
That's when I was boxing. Sugar Ray Leonard was there.
And he was...
And Marvin Hagler.
Okay, the big name. I wish Eugene were here because he followed boxing, like, you know.
Right,
I've heard him mention Hagler and...
Right, these were the lighter weights. These were more my weight, one middleweight. And it was Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard.
And then, like, yeah, that's another, like, everybody talks about, like, heavyweight champion of the world, right, that sort of thing, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably am, but, like, I think it's held that, you know, the lesser, the lighter weight classes, there's more, like, it's more exciting, maybe?
Yes.
Like I'm thinking of, like, heavyweight fights when I grew up, and, like, other than Mike Tyson, it was, like, a lot of just guys leaning on each other, right, it seems.
Exactly.
So like,
exactly,
I don't know, it's
there,
like,
is no good
Pacquiao is like all right, like action, you know, all
right, then the lighter weights were definitely more action, there's no question about that. I mean, the heavyweights are big guys. I mean, they're just wailing their punches around, but there hasn't been any good heavyweights for a long time since Tyson and even before that.
And then like, did you ever, you said 49-6, I think, did you ever have ambitions of like going pro, or was
I was ready to turn pro. Mr. Rossi was lining it all up, but I got a detached retina in my eye, and I'm yet to repair that. And then I got my girlfriend at the time pregnant, and her father insisted, he was another old Italian, not Sicilian, but he insisted, you have to marry, you got to get married.
Okay.
And you got to move on with your life. You can't be doing this.
And was that in a fight that you got that injury?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, through all the fights that I had, constantly getting hit.
Wow. And then, like, and I guess, like you alluded to with Ali, like, did you decide to say, like, I don't, you know, you don't want to end up, like, with, you know, just getting...
No, I just said, you know what, with this injury and my girlfriend being pregnant, I said, you know what, maybe it is time. I was 25 years old, 24 years old, and I said, maybe it is time to just go to work.
And then did you, like, go to, like, you know, just working full-time? Or,
yes,
like, what
yes,
happened?
Heavy construction. I worked for Century Construction, CJ Fucci in New Haven. I did a lot of work with them.
And then was it just, you know, like, what we think of as, like, you know, the construction trade?
Heavy construction. Or? I was in 20-foot deep trenches laying sewer pipe.
Wow. And then was that like a union job, or was it?
No, they're union now, these two companies, but when I was working for them, they were non-union.
Mm-hmm. And then did you, I guess you had a first marriage, is that?
Yes.
Okay, and like raising a young family?
Right. I actually got married, had a baby, built a house, and started a business all in the same year.
Hmm. And was that the business that would become?
Birmingham Construction. Okay. Actually, what it was is it was Birmingham Construction Services Company, Inc. I had a partner, and we worked together for 10 years. And then in 95, he wanted to separate and go his own way. And I said, okay, then I'm going to form my own company. And I formed Berm One Construction in 95.
Okay, so this was in the mid-80s, I guess you
right,
decided?
Right, 1986.
Okay, decided to to start that business?
I started with the last $500 that me and my wife had, and she was totally against it. She said, we got to pay the mortgage. I said, listen, the mortgage will come. We'll find money to pay that. Let me start the business. I remember going out and buying a cement mixer and rollers and trucks and everything.
And then was it in, were you living in Ansonia?
Yes, right out of my garage. Okay. Right out of my garage at 3 High Acres Road. I started there. A lot of people know how I started.
And then, like, you still live at that
house? Still there, yep.
Okay. I'm sorry to jump around, but before leaving the boxing topic completely, I just wanted to, a quick digression. Do you have, like, a favorite boxing movie? Like, there's a lot of famous ones.
The greatest boxing movie ever made, in my estimation, is The Cinderella Man. Because that's a story about Jim Braddock, who's one of my heroes, he was on the breadline. Guy had nothing. His kids were taken away from him. He was heartbroken. And his manager, Joe Gould, got him a fight for $200. He had enough money to pay his electric and his rent. And then from there, he beat this contender. And they just kept giving him more and more fights. And next thing you know, he fought Max Baer for the heavyweight title and beat him. And that was the biggest upset, one of the biggest upsets to come back from that.
Okay, yeah, and that's Russell Crowe and Renee Zellweger. That
right.
was relatively recent. Like,
and I Paul think. Giamatti.
Right.
What
right,
a
right.
great movie. Let me tell you, I recommend everybody just watch that movie. It's a tearjerker, and you'll be like, whoa, what this guy accomplished.
Yeah, I remember seeing
that. And it's a true story. That's what I like about it. These Rocky movies are not true stories, they're fiction. Mm. I mean, I like the true stories.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, Rocky IV as a play.
Yeah,
I think that's funny just because of the absurd training sequence.
But that was the greatest movie boxing movie. It definitely was that.
And then, I don't know, did you watch the Mayweather-McGregor fight Saturday?
You know,
was it Saturday?
You know, there's no way I'm going to pay $99 to watch an MMA fighter who's an amateur fight a seasoned professional champion, boxing champion, because the boxing champion is always going to win. I thought he was going to win in a 12-round decision because Mayweather don't have the punching power, but he ended up stopping him in 10 rounds. McGregor was exhausted, and I really think, just looking at the highlights, he played with him. My 12-year-old son was up till 12 o'clock watching it. He got it somehow free, I don't know how, on his phone, and he watched the whole fight. And
I got it somehow
free, and he texted me about 2:30 in the morning and said, Dad, he won in a 10th-round knockout.
Yeah, and like that, that was, I don't know anything about it, but the general consensus, and it seemed to be, the first couple rounds, McGregor came out and was throwing punches left and right, and then he just tired out.
Hey, absolutely.
Followed
absolutely.
The script of what is
he never
to
went
be
10
there.
Rounds. I don't think he ever went past 4 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was a no brainer. I wasn't going to pay $99 for that.
And you were wise not to, I guess.
Yeah.
So sorry for that digression.
No problem.
So you were, we were saying you were like just, raising a young family, living, was that your first house you ever got on High Acres Road? And you still live there, I guess.
Yep. I saved my money during all the years that I worked. From the time I started working at 14, I always saved my money. And I was able to put a down payment down. My mother said, you want, I'll co-sign with you and we'll buy that house.
And then, like, talk about how did your business, how did you grow your business? Was it just a method?
I lost my first, the first wife I lost because I was never home. I was so involved in my business. I was there 24/7, actually. I was there all the time. Even though she lived upstairs, I was downstairs in the garage. I was always working, or I was always out in the field working. I knew what it took to get a business off the ground. And I built a real good business, very good business. I mean, I did major work for Yankee Gas. I was statewide. Of the 169 towns in the state of Connecticut, I've worked in 120 of them.
Hmm. And was it mostly like doing that sort of road work, or was it?
Right. I'm a sewer contractor. I went to get my license and that's what I do. I was doing a lot of sewer projects all over the state. Then I got into concrete sidewalks. If you go to Waterbury, the north end of Waterbury, every single street, I did all the sidewalks there.
And then, like, when you first announced your candidacy for mayor, was it was at your business over on...
Yeah. Riverside Drive.
Riverside Drive. Sorry, that's terrible of me that I didn't remember. But you were actually, when you first started, it was in your garage?
Actually in my garage from 86 to 95. And then in 95, I came here to 158
when
Main
you started
Street. I talked
Berm
to Dr. Papora about getting suite 301. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was for like 3 years. And then I built, in 98, I built across the river.
And then, boy, I should have mentioned, we're in 158 Main Street, a building right near the train station. We're in office 30. That's literally down the hall from your old office. As we walked in today, you said you've walked these stairs many times.
Oh, many times. I walked these stairs.
So, were you always interested in politics growing up? No, not really.
How I got into politics was in 1995. Nancy Valentine was running for mayor. Nancy Valentine called me and said, "You're a business owner. I was wondering if you'd be interested in running for alderman in the 7th Ward and representing the 7th Ward." And I said, "Sure, I'll do that." And I ran and I won. I won big in a landslide. And in 95, and then I ran again in 97 and won again. And then she didn't win in 99.
That was the Delavope year.
Delavope got the sweep. He brought everybody in. And then in 2002, Jimmy Delavope appointed me to the police commission.
And then when you were first on the board of aldermen, do you remember what the political makeup of the board was?
There was eight or nine Democrats and five or six Republicans.
Huh, okay.
That's all it was with Nancy Valentine.
That's interesting because, as you said, 99, I guess Dell won big.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was a Democratic sweep. And then when I first started at the Valley Indy, I think there were maybe one or two Republican aldermen. Was it like that for those whole...
All them years, it was all Democrat.
And then when you became mayor, it was the opposite effect. It was the Republicans have taken over.
Right.
So when you were first on the board you would think there would be if it was a split a little more evenly, what was the dynamic like? Was it different than now?
It was similar to now. There was a little bit of back and forth. There were some hotheads on the board.
You always get hotheads, right?
Yes, we currently have them too, but whatever.
we'll get into that later maybe. So when you were, was it just go to the alderman meeting every month and see what the business was of the board? Was it, did you have a lot of people driving by your house or office saying, "You got to help me with this"? Or
all the time. And I did, being in business, I work with people, every day. So I'm used to it. So I take care of it.
And then, you lost the re-election in 99, and then you said you were appointed to the police commission?
Right. In 2002, they went from three commissioners on the board of police commission, and they added two new spots. They brought it to five, and me and Ann Pitney were picked to serve as the other commissioners.
And that Ann Pitney is the current
chairwoman
of the of the police commission. So wow, she's been
That board of all the boards in the city of Ansonia, that's near and dear to me because I know everybody. I served with them for 10 years.
And then what serving on the board of aldermen too, how did that sort of inform your opinions or knowledge of the city? You said your father was a police officer.
Sure.
I would guess you knew something about it.
I wanted to change the police commission. I wanted a little bit be more transparent in certain things. I remember when I was on the board of police commission, I said we need an internal affairs investigative committee so that if someone has a complaint out there, we can address it. But they didn't have that prior to me being there, and I started that.
Hmm. And then how do you go from there, I guess? When you, you're serving on the police commission, I guess, it's a less prominent role than alderman. I guess you would have your business this whole time, I guess.
Yes.
When did you meet your wife?
My second wife, I met her in 97 in Naples, Italy.
Oh, wow. And she's from
Naples, Italy, my wife. She just, I think in 2000, 15 or 16, she became a citizen. In fact, my screensaver on my computer at the office is a picture of her and the judge as she's getting her certificate of citizenship.
Wow.
So she just became a citizen.
Wow, that's awesome. And then, somebody's cell phone is that, what's going on? That's all right. Well, we could edit that out. Probably not. So, now how many kids do you have? Was Anthony from your first marriage?
Anthony and Salvatore were from my first marriage. Sal is 31. Anthony is 29. Okay. And then in 98, I had Lillian. She's now going to be 20 next year.
Wow.
She's at nursing school at St. Vincent's College in her second year. She just got accepted into the nursing program.
Okay, awesome. And then, I don't know, David Jr.
Then I had Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Jennifer is 18, and she's at UB with the dental hygienist program.
Oh, nice.
And then I got 12-year-old Dave, who's now at the Assumption School.
Awesome. And then, you were at your business, I guess, in the 2000s, that sort of era, as you said, Mayor Della Volpe was in the mayor's office from, I guess, 99 to 2013. Has running for mayor been like a long-term ambition for you, or how did that?
Yeah, I would say, as far back as the mid-70s, I always said I wanted to run for public office, something big. And the opportunity came in 2013 where I said, after that huge tax increase, I said, I know I can do better. I know I can do better. I said, so I'm going to run. I'm going to talk to the Republican Town Committee and tell them that I want to run for it.
And then, as I said, there was a Republican mayor up until 99. Then the Democrats sort of took over. There were years when there were no Republican aldermen, right. I think. There were.
It didn't happen until 2009 when John Marini came in right. The third ward.
And then, as that was happening, was it based? And there were years when Della Volpe ran unopposed.
Yep.
When you threw your hat in the ring, was it just go for it?
Actually, it was a plan. When John Marini got in 2009, I had conversations with him that I says, I'd like to run for mayor, and I'd like for you to be part of the team. I would like for you to be part of the team. But I don't know what year I'm going to do this at, because the next election is 2011, and I don't know if I'll be ready then. But it didn't happen until 2013. But by 2011, we already had four more members of the Board of Aldermen as Republicans.
So was it, I guess, like a party building?
Right.
How did that happen?
That's exactly what it was.
How'd you go about doing that?
No, we just got candidates that we thought we had. Charlie Stowe and Phil Tripp and Joan Radin. Joan Radin had run for that office many times in the past and was always defeated. And in 2011, she was able to win.
And then, that's interesting. And then, what made 2013 the right time?
Saw the tax increase, and I saw that nothing really was happening in Ansonia, activity wise or economic development wise. And I said, we have the greatest Main Street in the valley, if not in this section of the state. I mean, it's for the pickings. I says, you had Crave already here. I says, well, let's build on that. And so we started building. We wanted to start building on different things.
And then you're obviously running for re-election. This is why we're doing the interview. So we know you want to be mayor until at least 2019. Will there be a point do you want to be mayor for the rest of your life? Would there be a point where you're like, I'm done here, time to retire?
No,
like,
I'm going to be here as long as the residents of Ansonia want me. That's what I got to say about that. As long as the people want me, I'll be here. I'm not going anywhere.
So until you're defeated for re-election,
whatever may be.
I guess I'm inferring that you don't from that answer, but do you have any ambition for higher office than mayor of Ansonia?
No, I haven't thought about it. My main focus, I love Ansonia. I bleed blue. I really do. And I want only the best for the city of Ansonia. So I said, you know what? This is just another chapter in my life of accomplishments that I've done in my life, whether it was my business, whether it was boxing, whether it was growing up as a kid. This is another accomplishment, I feel. And I want to take care of the residents of Ansonia. That's what I'm here for.
And then do you see it mainly as that? I mean, you mentioned the Main Street economic development. I think it's fair to say that was, you know, the main plank of your election campaign,
right?
And re-elections, your one re-election campaign since, is that sort of the main goal, or like
economic development? You know, there's an issue with taxes. You know, my opponent is saying, how could he keep taxes low? It's not sustainable. Yes, it is sustainable. I have a sneak peek of economic development in Ansonia Recharged right here on the board that I wanted to bring. Through economic development, we're going to be able to stabilize taxes. We got 30 projects occurring or already occurred that are going on in the city of Ansonia. So economic development is on the forefront with me. I've got over $20 million in grants. I know that some of my opponents and even in my own party saying, why are you getting all these grants? We got to match them. Yeah, you got to match 5 or 10%. But for $20 million, I take that every day. And if I got to match $1.5 million to it, every day to get activity going and get economic development going. I mean, but through stabilizing taxes, we're going to be able to work with economic development.
Yeah, and I, as I said, I'm hoping that you and your opponent, Tarek Raslin,
sure,
the Democratic nominee, would maybe come back and appear on the same podcast where you could sort of hash out the issues,
sure,
more. But like, just in the interest of fairness, like during our interview last week, he did talk about like one issue specifically that, mm-hmm, again, I think it's fair to offer you the chance to respond. And that was, just by way of background, I think there have been successes in terms of economic development since you took office, like better packages moved in, Farrell's built a new headquarters. You mentioned Main Street. There's more happening there, I think it's fair to say. I think the grand list during that time has grown by about $8 million, according to figures you've presented. But like that, like given the tax rate, that doesn't that gives the city more revenue, but not like, you know, millions more. To stabilize the mill rate, you guys have taken money from the city's bank account, the rainy day fund.
Right.
This is something that's been mentioned a lot during budget times. So everybody's working from the same set of facts. Like the first year was $550,000. The second year was 2 million, then it was 2.5 million, and then this most recent budget year was nearly 3.5 million. So, like, without like, will there be? You know, I'm assuming there wouldn't be tens of millions of dollars being added to the tax rolls between now and next July. So, like, wouldn't you have to make like a lot of painful cuts to not borrow from the rainy day fund and still not raise taxes?
Well, our fund balance was at 20% when I first came to office. It was very high. And I've looked at all the surrounding communities and throughout the state, and I also talked to different people to find out what would be a good fund balance would be. And they said anywhere from 8 to 10%. And that's where we're at right now. We're about 10% or 12%, our fund balance. But
12%
right,
of annual budget,
right?
Be. So it's about $6 million. Is that?
No, it's about $9 million.
Okay,
it's right. About $9 million.
And then like, yeah, the
it's definitely very healthy.
And I should have said during that introduction, like the overall spending, it was like 61.3 when you came into office. That was your first year,
right?
It went up to about 64.1 last year, but then in the most recent budget from July, it went down about 4% to 61.4 million,
right,
thereabouts. So it's a little higher than when you first took office. There was a rise and then a fall.
Then a rise and a fall, month. Only because of the contracts with the police union, with the public works, with the Board of Ed, what we had to give them. But yeah, getting back to the income coming in, the taxes coming in. I mean, with these 30 projects that we got going on, we're going to get significant income from these here projects. And I mean, there may be some cuts. There may be some cuts in the next budget, but we're going to look at it. We're going to look at everything.
And I guess playing devil's advocate, which is, you know, sort of my job, I think somebody might say that, hey, like, you build up that fund balance to a little more than you need in case, like, you have to deal with a big cut or whatever. You know, with the current state budget impasse, and like, I think more than half the school budget anyway comes from the state,
right?
And you know, you guys have always said that they're still underfunding it,
yes,
given what they should be given, and then like the city gets a lot of state aid besides. Given that uncertainty, like, shouldn't you have like a higher fund balance? Maybe, I don't know.
No, I think where we're at now. I mean, if you look at Derby's is in the negative. Shelton is at 8%. Seymour's at 5.5%. We're at 10-12%. I mean, I think we're comfortable.
And then I mentioned like that state budget impasse. I'm just wondering, like, you know, that's why the city hasn't sent out car tax bills yet, because there's that uncertainty.
Right.
Where do you see that?
Well, I don't think we're going to be cut anything. I think we're going to get all the money that we were told we're going to get from the state budget. And I think that the mill rate is going to be stable for the car tax. But I didn't want to send out bills now and then find out that they raised it, and then I had to send out a supplement bill, because I don't think the residents will be too happy. I realize that this may all occur around Christmas time, when everybody's out Christmas shopping and paying their credit cards off. But I'm hoping that that's not the case. I'm hoping by October 1st that thing kicks in with the governor.
And I guess, you know, like, car taxes are less than, you know, real estate taxes.
Right.
But I guess just be cognizant of that, and, you know, that may be coming down the pike later, I guess. But that's something that happens every year, I guess. So I guess what do you see yourself in? Like, do you see yourself in like 10 years still sitting in that mayor's chair, or like what's the long term view for you?
I mean, I really would like to be mayor for a long time. I mean, I really enjoy the job. You know, in my construction business, I've hired hundreds of people, but I only hire the best. I have Sheila, I have John, I have Lori, I have many people work within my administration, and they make things work, and that's what I'm all about. So as long as I'm able to, I plan on being mayor, provided the people want me.
And now it's Sheila O'Malley, the economic development
right.
director. You've mentioned John Marini. I think we mentioned him. John Marini, he's the corporation counsel and former alderman, former Republican
right.
alderman. You mentioned him. Awesome. So, like, anything, I've sort of exhausted all of my pre-written questions here. I wanted to avoid, I didn't want to get too much into the quote-unquote issues, because, as I said, like,
we're
hopefully... both of you guys will come in, and like, I wanted to stay far afield from national stuff as possible for now anyway.
I'm not into the national stuff, to be honest with you. I'm more about local and working with the community and working with the residents of Ansonia.
Actually, and like, I think during your most recent election, you talked about when you started your company, you were partly inspired by Ronald Reagan. And I think you have some Reagan memorabilia in your office.
Yes, I do.
Was he like? Do you see yourself?
He's a mentor of mine.
is that like? How did Reagan inspire
Just,
you? I meant to
you know,
ask that. Sorry.
My family is predominantly Democratic. In 1980, I said to my mother, I said, "Mom, I'm going to register as a Republican because I like Ronald Reagan. I like what he stands for." This was his first election, and it's proven he was very good. He was the greatest.
And then
he loved America.
What about him specifically inspired you? Just like
rhetoric. He was like a grandfatherly guy. He was one of the oldest men ever to be elected president. I mean, everybody's retiring. This guy's going into the hardest job there could be, and he handled everything cool. Everything.
And I don't know.
And I like that in him.
I didn't want to get into it too much, but perhaps we could use a little bit more of that on the national stage.
Absolutely. That's what I agree with you 100% on that. Absolutely.
From every, you know, from,
yep.
We won't mention any names.
I know. Okay.
This podcast could be another 40 minutes.
Yep.
So, all right. As I said, I've asked all the questions I've had. Like, is there anything else I didn't bring up about your background or your life? No. That
I think we covered everything. A lot of people in Ansonia know me. They know where I came from, and they know how I started my business and my boxing and everything. So, and we covered everything. So go Ansonia.
Awesome. All right. Well, just again, thank you so much for coming in here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. As I said, hopefully we could get you back here for a sort of, not going to have like a stopwatch out for,
right.
Debate, but right. Just like a conversation with your opponent.
Sure. Now and, I look forward to it. I'm glad I have an opponent.
Yeah, yeah. As you've mentioned in the run-up to this sort of election process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's Mayor David Cassetti. Thank you again so much for coming in.
Thank you, Ethan.
For hundreds of years, we've brought you the news. For energy info, we gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Changing market now threatens our lives. Post-literation, critical reading, dumbed down nation, signs of inbreeding. TV sucking ideas from our head. Public discourse just about dead. We'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur. Our readers are in the opens each day. Yeah. It's free information here to stay. Not even hookers give it away. Advertising, metastasizing, newsroom shrinking, constant attrition. We'll ride the dinosaur. We'll ride the dinosaur. Pictures too. An editorial comment for a buck or two. Fire down the block, the murder next door. And now we wonder what it's all for. Social media coming free to your funny pages. The mayor's wages, criminal seats, corruption schemes. Ink stained wretches asking tough questions. We'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur. The presses are running all through the night. We're printing the truth with all of our might. We're platform agnostics, got that interweb too. Buy an ad, see what we can do. We still have subscribers, still have our fans. We're here every day, so give us a chance or we'll make an art stand. Just hold us in your hand and we'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur.